Good morning and welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. This is part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. I'm Joel Katz, and my guest this week, we've never spoken with Dr. Mitchell Stroh, orthopedic surgeon, fellow of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, fellow trained in sports medicine, and has a whole lot of information and experience that we're going to dig into today. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on the show. Now, I know that you, and I want to talk about this first, and this is about you personally, or professionally, I should say. You are one of the team doctors for the LA Chargers. You've spent your time in Philadelphia training under physicians for the Eagles, the Flyers, the Phillies, and Sixers. I'm a Philly guy. Those are my teams. So we want to dig into that. You did some stuff for the Philadelphia Marathon and some other teams. Tell us about that. How'd you get into that?
Yeah, so I originally had got into medicine. I was a track runner. I actually ran for Temple University in Philadelphia.
Oh, I went to Temple. What years?
Oh, nice. I was 2005 through 2009.
Okay.
So I was a D1 track guy, probably a couple years off from when you were there.
Yes, like. I was there. I preceded you by many years.
Yeah, Chaney was the coach, though. He had been there for a while, but he might have been there when for the basketball team, that is. He may have been there when you were there.
Who was
the
coach?
At the time. Chaney, John.
Yes,
Chaney,
yeah, he was
the,
definitely there. Sure, he was in his
he was
in his prime.
He was, he was towards the end of his career while I was there, but still a local legend. So I was on the track team. I ended up having a track injury, and one of the orthopedic surgeons from the Temple orthopedic program actually got me back to running, and I actually wound up having the best season of my career, my senior year, after he got me back. So when I was rehabbing that type of thing, I spent a lot of time with the ortho department and really just a physical therapist trying to get back. So I kind of decided at that point that I was going to try to, if everything went well, unfortunately it did, make my life's work being involved with working and treating athletes. So eventually I was fortunate enough to go into orthopedics as a specialty after getting into medical school. After I finished my orthopedic training, which I was involved with a lot of the Philly sports team doctors, our program director, Jack McPhillamy, was actually the 76ers head team physician for about 13 years. While I was still with the program, and then we worked with quite a few of the other doctors for the Flyers, Phillies, and Sixers. Was fortunate enough actually to be on Dr. Marchetto and Dr. DeLuca's service the year the Eagles won the Super Bowl. So I was involved in some of the games, treating some of the players on that Super Bowl team, which was really special. I then went on to do a fellowship with Hoag Orthopedic Institute, which was the team physicians for the Los Angeles Chargers. So I was involved with pretty much every practice I covered for the team, and went to all the home games and most of the away games, including we had the that you're familiar with the London games that they have now.
Right.
It was one of the earlier London games where we played the Tennessee Titans at Wembley Stadium, which was an incredible event. So we got to practice over in London, and then it was sort of, you know, a week long thing where we eventually culminated with playing them and won by a point. Went for 2 points. The team went for 2 points, I should say, with as the clock was pretty much winding down to zero. Instead of doing the 1 point kick, they hit the 2 point conversion, and we won the game, getting to head back to Los Angeles off of a win. So that was a pretty cool event, pretty special event, and I've sort of been involved with some of the other types of athletes, you know, high school and collegiate level throughout. But those are kind of some of the big highlights that I've been able to fortunately be a part of with. Within sports medicine.
Nice. And now you're with Hackensack and JFK. And I want to talk with you about, I'm a runner. I run every day, about 3 miles a day, 5K every day. And first thing I wanted to talk to you about was overuse, because I think about that sometimes. I'm in my mid-50s, and a lot of people say, you don't need to run every day. You shouldn't be running every day. But I have been running for a long time. I haven't had any major injuries. Is there a concern there? Not just about runners who are in their mid-50s, just an overuse injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to talk about that a bit, and great to hear that you're a fellow runner as well. And if you've been doing it for many years, a little bit less of a concern if you're kind of keeping the amount of running that you've been doing relatively consistent, or if you're going to increase it, that it's not a huge jump all at once. So In general, as a broad topic, overuse injuries are essentially microtrauma that occurs. They damage the muscles, the tendons, or the ligaments, and it happens with these repetitive stresses that that occur without giving the body ample time to heal up. So someone like yourself that's been running for many years, your body is adapted to that level of activity, and you're able to to do most things because you haven't had much of an injury. Mm-hmm. Whereas with overuse, it's sort of a threshold, just like you might see some of the athletes doing things on TV that most people are unable to do. They've eventually allowed their bodies to adapt to that point, to that level. So typically, there's different stages of overuse. Is if there's pain in the area of activity is a normal finding, but that should typically resolve within about 48 to 72 hours. So that's sort of just the normal process of working out, of doing exercises, of competing in sports, and that's typically what you would see. If there is pain and difficulty performing activities of daily living, in particular, any difficulty with weight bearing or trouble where the symptoms are still present after about a week or so, then those are signs that there might be some overuse that's going on, with the most severe being chronic pain at rest. So those are sort of the body's way of letting us know that there is a process going on beyond just the normal recovering from exercises. So to go back and circle back to running, for example, if you're looking at runners who may have an overuse issue, an overuse problem, typically what we see with that is rapid increases in the number of activity. The general recommendation for a runner, for example, is once the threshold's met or baseline's met, when increasing the amount of running that's being done, typically it's usually around 10% or so increase per week. You're going to be in the safe zone. Now, some people are able to do a bit more than that, but if you're increasing, you know, from about 30 miles per week, and then you're going to, you know, increase the following week, it would be prudent not to jump up to about 60 miles. You know, it would be mm-hmm. a 50% increase, and ultimately, you're pretty safe in that that zone from a runner's standpoint. But like I said, if there's any of those red flag symptoms like pain at rest or difficulty walking around, putting weight down, then that's symptoms that might be either overuse or, you know, a more acute injury like a tear of a ligament or something like that. So that's kind of how we tend to think about, at least from a running standpoint, how to address overuse injuries.
So if you have some pain during running and it goes away immediately and it doesn't happen all the time, you're okay. But if you have it throughout the day into the next day, then that's when it should be checked out.
Yeah, typically within about 48 hours, most of the pain should resolve or should at least be trending in the right direction. You know, it's a spectrum. So if it's, you know, lingering a little bit more than that, but it's something that you're kind of used to and you know that you kind of maybe went a little bit harder that particular day, that can kind of go along with the on the spectrum a little bit closer towards the just, you know, having pain with working out as opposed to it being more of an actual overuse injury itself. But once you get into kind of those other areas, then, you know, we start to think about there might be a little bit something more going on, some of those micro traumas I was talking about.
And you said you don't want to jump up if you're doing 3 miles. I mean, this could be with any sport, any type of strenuous activity. You don't want to jump up to something, you know, double the amount. And I guess that would be the same if you're just starting. Let's see, those who want to start exercising, after you get checked out with the doctor to make sure it's okay for your heart and everything like that, you don't want to just start running 5 miles. You start out maybe walking a mile or two, or, you know, what would be a good recommendation?
I think that's fairly accurate. So it depends, you know, if there's some base level of fitness, some base level of exercise, you know, that you can kind of go off of. That's, you know, that's a pretty good starting point, whatever you're kind of typically doing. And if you say, hey, I want to get, you know, in better shape and start working out a bit more, you know, sticking with the, you know, running or weightlifting, what those type of examples, you would typically want to, you know, increase by about 10% or so in terms of the amount that you're doing. Versus if someone who doesn't exercise at all or whatsoever, you want to pick something that's a little bit more on the conservative side, not go out because you can take a pretty big step back if you're doing too much too soon. So that's kind of sort of general advice for how to get into starting exercising.
And probably I would think a good example of that is when these guys get together, you know, maybe they're in their 40s and they get back together, they reunite and they, oh, let's have a football game. And no one's exercised in 20 years. And then they go all out like they used to. And that's when everybody starts getting hurt, starts pulling things and things like that.
Yeah, within the orthopedic community, we have a name for that. We call it the weekend warrior, right? So
right.
That's not regularly having a routine of exercise. It's not uncommon, and you know, to a degree, you can sort of get away with that. But that's going to be kind of more of a soreness type of thing afterwards, if one's lucky. But if the muscles around the joints, the knee, for example, aren't quite strong enough, aren't quite able to help the knee sustain some of those new forces, then you worry about things like, you know, meniscus injury or an ACL injury or an MCL injury, things like that, where the ligaments are taking on the stress because the muscles are either, not quite strong enough or they get fatigued more easily. So those are kind of ways that that we see kind of these weekend warriors end up having injuries. So it's just, you know, a matter of being cautious, easing your way into it, and essentially trying to make sure that the muscles are going to be in the shape to do what you want them to do when participating in the sport. And athletes come in all shapes and sizes and all different levels of activity. That's the beautiful thing about sports. And it's just a matter of, you know, being smart about it and kind of having somewhat of a strategy when getting into sports so that an injury doesn't happen, because then you're ultimately going to be limited in what you can do while you're recovering from the injury.
Yeah, one might think that, you know, I'm going to play in an innocent weekend softball game just for fun, and then you're legging it out to first base, and then there goes the hamstring.
Exactly, you can get a hamstring tear. Interestingly enough, actually, when I was with the Chargers with the NFL, interesting statistic is that at training camp, actually, in the beginning of the season, the rates of these injuries, hamstring being one of the most noted examples, is significantly higher than later in the season. You would think that as the competition gets harder and, you get kind of somewhat fatigued within the season, that the injuries would actually go up. But it's a bit more that, you know, you're kind of regimented when you're with the team doing these training programs and these exercises versus, you know, very early on in the season. There's a lot of guys who are kind of on the bubble making the roster, and, they want to try to showcase themselves at these camps in the preseason when the teams are really looking to get their roster down mm-hmm. to the appropriate number of guys. So those are the situations where we actually see a higher rate of injuries, in particular hamstring injuries. Also, the fact that if there is some overuse or sort of a small acute injury, a lot of times in those situations, players will not, be so forthcoming that they have an injury. So you end up with a small problem becoming a big problem. So sort of just a bit of a more famous example of what can happen if a nagging injury or something that seems to be a little bit of an overuse is not addressed and you sort of quote-unquote push through early on. It can become a bigger problem. So, you know, a couple week injury might become a couple month injury, or, you know, or whereas you can potentially change things around to not have such a significant downtime.
Speaking with Dr. Mitchell Stroh, orthopedic surgeon with JFK and Hackensack, can you play through these injuries? Are there some injuries that you if you play through, it's going to get worse, and then there's some that maybe you can play through and it'll go away even though you stay active?
Yeah, so I think that'll lead me into a good point about kind of what are some of the injuries that we see with some of these overuse type of things.
Okay.
So we'll take pitchers, for example. So say little league pitchers. That's a pretty big area where we see a lot of overuse. So there's general recommendations about pitch counts that pitchers should have, and even in Major League Baseball games, if you're watching on TV, they have next to essentially where the score is at, the number of pitches.
Sure.
You kind of see the starters when they're getting up close to that, 90 number or so. You know that it's going to be about time, and that comes from the science behind what happens with the body. So
wait, was that always? Since you just mentioned that, was that always something that they watched? They just didn't mention it, because it seems like someone hits 100 now. I'm like, oh, he's at 100. What's going to happen?
Right.
He's got a no hitter going.
Nice,
is he going to finish it?
Yeah,
and
nice,
back in the day, it was like you throw 200 pitches. I'm exaggerating, but.
No, you're absolutely right. There's definitely been a much more focus in baseball at every level now of looking at the numbers. Obviously, if you're talking about a World Series game when, a pitcher might be at the very end and this is going to be it for them if they're, on a roll and pitching well, that's a little bit of an exception. But in general, once you get up kind of towards those higher numbers, and there's different metrics and different criteria when they last played and things like that, but it is looked at just because, you expect that there's going to be a decline in number one performance and an increase rate of injury. So if you look at, taking it down to a level below Major League Baseball, say, the local Little League pitcher, grade school pitcher, high school pitcher, even collegiate pitcher, we look at the number of pitches that they're doing, not just during the game itself, but overall throughout the course of the year. So
right.
It's very common.
Catchers
to see,
too.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's a lot of throwing,
mm-hmm.
and we see this become a problem a lot of times when kids are or athletes, I should say, are involved not just in one team, but are involved with multiple teams. So they don't typically get that period of rest, because as the formal high school season ends, they're then doing their travel team or their club team on top of it. So the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, they typically will recommend a period of about 2 months out of the year break from one competitive sport that's working on one body part, and that pretty much allows the body to give these micro traumas that are occurring a chance to kind of reset and gear up for later in the year. Even Major League Baseball players and Major League basketball players, they have a quote-unquote off season. They're doing different types of training during that time, but they're not doing the exact same repetition. So it's at all levels, from Little League all the way up to the professional level. That's sort of the recommendation. And going off of that, for these players, for these kids, if you're talking about overuse injury prevention, one of the recommendations is, if you compare a single sport athlete from a young age to a multi-sport athlete, the studies show that the single sport athlete has a higher chance of, number one, burnout, but number two, injury, which can be sort of related. So burnout, which is, predisposing people to these injuries, has to do not just physically but also psychologically. If if these players are getting fatigued and not quite performing at the level for both chemical and psychological factors, they're more likely to get injured. So oftentimes the current recommendation is for younger athletes to try to be multi-sport athletes. It'll keep things interesting. It helps them to not have the chance of having this burnout that we talk about, and also it gives the muscle kind of tendon bone unit that's being used for the one quote unquote main sport a break while doing another sport. The only slight caveat to that is if it's the same type of muscle group that's being used. So for example, swimming and pitching, you're using a lot of shoulder,
mm-hmm.
With that, you're not quite getting as much of a break as if you're doing, say baseball and soccer or something along those lines, where they're kind of two different muscle groups. But it still is recommended to at least get about 2 months off per year from one dedicated sport, just to help prevent overuse injuries in these athletes.
Yeah, especially in the warmer climates where they can play year-round. Around here, we have the winter, so baseball, you're not really playing real baseball year-round. But if you're in Florida and other warm states, it's around the clock, and they need to take that break. Any sport, but
yeah, exactly. No, that's a big big talking point with the southern schools, so that they're able to do some of these sports that we don't really have up here. Year round, they're able to do it year round with their different club programs and stuff like that. And up here, it's a little bit more, of a travel team type of thing if you're going to do that. So not as much of an issue, but certainly is something to consider.
Yeah, and well, injuries do happen, as we know, and you know, when someone is injured, there are different ways to treat it, but one of the ways is with injections, and they always say, oh, they're going to give him a shot, and this is professionally speaking, professional sports, they're going to need a shot before the game or whatever. How does that work? Like, you can't just be giving people shots all the time, and what are these shots, what's in them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, in general, you want to ideally avoid the shots, right? So, the goal is to not have to, put medication into someone to get them through a game. So, when you talk about injections, the most common injection when you hear about players, particularly in the professional setting, getting a quote-unquote shot, it's usually a steroid shot. So cortisone is the one that most people know of. Cortisone is a medication that is a steroid. It's the name brand of one of the steroids, but it's kind of like tissue and Kleenex. It's sort of the brand that everyone knows. So even though it's usually newer, better medications than cortisone, it's sort of the name that you hear get thrown around a lot. So cortisone shot, which is a type of a steroid shot. Typically, betamethasone is one that in my practice we will typically use, but there's very select times for when you should use that type of medication. So if someone has, just to go through just the knee anatomy, for example, so in the knee you have your thigh bone, your shin bone, on the surface of the bones you have the cartilage, which wears out as we age. Between the cartilage is something called the meniscus. That's the shock absorber for the knee. And then in the center of the knee is the famous ACL that we hear talked about with athletes a lot. And then you have the PCL that crosses it, and then the MCL and LCL on the sides. So when we talk about sort of an injury inside the joint that would warrant an injection, depending on an athlete's age, determines the type of injection that we will sometimes give. So steroid like cortisone helps to decrease the inflammation that's in the joint, and it lasts long term. The part that is the downside to it is that if you don't already have a lot of cartilage wear and tear, which is, most patients that have cartilage wear and tear, which we call arthritis, the steroid can actually degrade the good cartilage that young athletes have. So in sort of the younger athlete that that has a injury at the level of their knee, we typically try to be very sparing with the amount of steroids that we put in there, because it'll ultimately wear out their knee. For someone who's a bit older that might have what we call an arthritic flare-up, meaning they have some wear and tear of the cartilage, they have some arthritis in the knee, and then they did a bit with sports or just being active, walking around, going to somewhere like Disney World, doing a lot of walking, and they get a flare-up. In those cases, we'll give sort of a steroid injection into the knee, and it doesn't have as much of a breakdown effect on the cartilage because the cartilage is already worn down to a degree. Beyond that, that's inside the joints. We talk about other types of injections. So along with the wear and tear of the cartilage picture, there's something called a gel injection or hyaluronic acid. That's kind of a lubricant for the knee. But that, again, is more for patients that have a lot of wear and tear that the knee has, what we call arthritis, which, again, is the wear and tear of the cartilage. And that helps those symptoms as well in a percentage of patients. But, again, for a younger, healthier athlete, that's typically not done as much. Then you get into these PRP injections, which stand for platelet-rich plasma. Essentially what that involves is taking someone's own blood, spinning it down, removing the platelet layer, which is one of the three parts of the blood. You have the white blood cells, the red blood cells, and the platelets. So you remove the platelet layer, and that can be used in some cases for tendon injuries, like chronic tendonitis. Typically not as first line, but we do see it, and it is popular in professional sports for things like hamstring injuries and Achilles tendonitis, which is inflammation of the Achilles tendon by the ankle, or tennis elbow or a golfer's elbow, which are basically overuse injuries around the elbow involved in those type of movements. So that is the type of injection that's not inside the joint. It's for the tendons, since the tendons don't have the same type of blood supply as other parts of the body. They typically will get thickened and chronically inflamed, meaning their structure changes over time. And these PRP injections can help in those cases. But that's more selective for certain types of tendon injuries, as opposed to sort of the steroid shots when you hear, you know, in the big stages, the big settings, about giving a shot. But, you know, a common thing that you often get asked is, you know, treat me like you would treat a professional athlete. But an in-season professional athlete that has, you know, a contract on the line, they're not as focused necessarily on long-term joint health as they are as getting through the season and making sure that they are performing at that high level. Right. So while they're getting these, you know, quote-unquote steroid shots or cortisone shots, to complete some of the games, you have to just be careful extrapolating that to all athletes, since it's not a great necessarily long-term solution if there's not a lot of cartilage wear and tear to begin right. with.
Well, we'll treat you like that when you make the money like that.
Yeah, to a degree. When to you, a degree. And you have to make that decision. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly right.
Dr. Mitchell Stroh, orthopedic surgeon with JFK University Medical Center in Edison and Hackensack Meridian Health Network. Thank you.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
For more info, go to jfkmc.org, or for a podcast of this show, you can go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. JFK Spotlight on Health. It's brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. And I'm Joel Katz. We'll talk again next week.